It's stardate 95332.89. That's a long stardate. And you're listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod.
I love this every time.
You like the stardates?
I like the stardates.
I hope somebody appreciates
the stardates. I like them. I mean, they make me feel like not the biggest nerd in the studio, so I love them.
You're very welcome. You're very
second place isn't like bragging rights, I feel like.
Hey, I'm not that guy, though.
Do you think there's listeners that are like, I'm not sure that was the correct star date. They go and look
absolutely.
It up.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
We're going to get emails about that.
Yeah. Well, that's bonkers.
I'm going to forward them all to you.
Oh, please.
You deal with them.
I would love to see that.
I'm Mike Moody. With me is...
Ashley Moreno.
Clyde Haynes.
Grant Davis.
And we are your Star Trek Discovery Pod bridge crew.
I'm sorry.
You know what?
Do we apologize for that?
I like that. I like it.
Okay, but let's think about that. If we are the bridge crew,
yeah,
you're the captain.
I mean, I don't want to be the captain,
tactical.
But I'm the captain.
Clyde's tactical.
Who can I be?
Science officer.
Science officer.
Chief technical science officer, or whatever they call him.
And chief engineer.
I will be
Pet Tribble.
Court jester. Pet Tribble. Whatever they have. I took whatever was available. I'm the janitor.
Oh, you know what? You can be the ensign who's running the helm.
Yeah.
While our helmsman is away.
Let me get you a red shirt.
You're the guy in the first episode who was like, fasten your seats and tray tables.
No, I don't want to be that guy.
Grant's on the con.
No, Chief O'Brien. You can be Chief O'Brien.
Oh, I love O'Brien. All right, you're
I'm
O'Brien.
I'm very O'Brien-esque. I get it.
You have no idea who O'Brien is, do you?
Is it Colm Meaney?
Yes.
Wow.
Kudos to
what?
Grant.
Why do I know that?
Okay, let me orient everybody. We're talking about episode 2 of Star Trek Discovery, and that was called Battle at the Binary Stars. So you can find our first episode about the premiere at StarTrekPod.com. You can also visit us on Twitter at StarTrekPod. Find us on Patreon, patreon.com/StarTrekPod. All right, guys. Just like we did for episode 1, hot takes on this second episode, which followed the first episode on CBS All Access. Ashley, I'm going to go with you first.
Yeah, so first, I like to see a little consequence from getting crazy. Like, so often, you know, when somebody steps out of line, they might spend the night in the brig, maybe a few other days.
A little wag of the finger.
Yeah, just like, oh, but your record, you know, shows us how great you are. Or, you know, whatever it is. They get transferred to a new ship, that kind of a thing. The hammer comes down. And I mean, I have to say, I think it makes sense.
It comes down hard.
Yeah.
And it looks like by the time we get to the end of this episode, it comes down harder than it ever has on Star Trek for a main character.
I don't think I've ever seen
a
hammer come down like that.
It's a big fucking hammer.
Yeah, which, I mean, I guess fair if you attack your captain and maybe due to some issues get labeled a war starter. I mean...
So your favorite thing is... where episode 2 is going to lead. That's what you love about episode 2.
Well, that was just when we were talking about first hot impressions. I was just like, holy shit, because that kind of gravity doesn't usually come out, especially in an early Star Trek episode.
Especially in space. They don't have gravity.
I see what you did there.
Thanks.
Dude, they 100% have artificial gravity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's new.
Way to ruin a joke, Mike. Way to ruin a joke.
He's new.
I'm Saru. Call me Saru.
Yeah, the buzzkill. Yeah,
I thought you were apologizing to me, and then I realized you were saying Saru.
Not sorry. Saru, not Saru.
So yeah, I liked a ton about this episode, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But just first impressions, I was just like, damn. There was like a full battle. Somebody is getting court-martialed, stripped of title. I mean, that's hardcore.
I think they nailed the pace in this one a little better than the first one. The first one, sometimes it was, it seemed like the pace was sometimes too quick, and I didn't get a chance to really sit and bask in this world like I wanted to. There was a lot of action here, which I really appreciated, but it wasn't too slow. It wasn't too fast. It was a healthy medium, and... again, I was, like I said in the first, our coverage of the first episode, I got really a lot more invested in the Michael Burnham character. And when we got to the point where she lost her captain, I felt for her emotionally, and I didn't expect that to happen. So I was in. I was in on this one. I liked it better than the premiere. Clyde?
You know, when we ended the first episode, I was kind of like, oh, this is nice. It's kind of neat. And even though it had this cliffhanger with the captain pointing a phaser at Michael Burnham's character, but I was kind of like, oh, and if it had ended there and they had just said, all right, the first season, first episode's done, see you next week, I'd have been like, cool, all right, I'm headed home. But at the end of the second episode, I was, if this was a binge series where you release all 15 episodes at one time, I absolutely would have looked up and said, yeah, one more. And I would have just kept going. Like, it just kept me, it had me. Like you said, Mike, the pacing, what was going on, I wanted to know more. And the biggest shock, and we'll get into that, was I did not expect Takuvma to die.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that this was the villain for the entire series. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll see him in flashbacks and stuff. But I was shocked. I was like, no, he's gonna be okay. He's, you know, they're gonna figure out something. And no, he died. That was huge, and it just made me want to know more. What happens next?
A true shock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Grant, what'd you think?
Yeah, I agree with Clyde. That first episode was like coke. This one was heroin. Now I'm addicted. Thanks a lot. It was super exciting. I think it had to do a little bit of the expected heavy lifting in the pilot episode. Mm-hmm. But once it was kind of able to show what it wanted to do, we established the characters in the world, it was just able to drive the action. I think the only slow points for me were a little bit of the flashbacks. I thought that maybe they did it a little bit too much. And going to the Klingons, like, the second time with, like, the argument, I was like, eh, you guys already hit that point. But I understand you need a break from the action going on there, so why they kind of like had to jump back story-wise. Just wasn't, like, as rewarding a scene. But otherwise, yeah, this is fantastic.
So let's talk about these Klingons. I don't mind that they were redesigned for this show and that they don't look like the TOS or TNG era Klingons, but I was under the assumption that the Klingons on the sarcophagus ship were special somehow, like they were cult members. So I thought they looked different they should look different for a specific reason, like they shave their heads and augment their faces and the back of their heads and their ridges for cultural cult reasons. But when they contacted the 24 other houses, those Klingons pretty much look the same. They look like, I mean, they had different styles of dress going on. One of them had like some bedazzle going on over her face. But for the most part, those guys look like the Klingons on Takuvma's ship. So I was a little surprised. I thought we're going to see more variation in the actual physical presence of the Klingons. But Ashley, I know you had some more thoughts on the Klingon look.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was kind of cracking jokes about it. And I know probably a lot of people are going to be a little annoyed. I mean, it's a pretty big change. But when the other guys showed up, I was expecting them to kind of have some variation, especially just like with the hairstyles and the clothing. I really feel like we've seen that across other series, even within the Klingons there. You know, we saw Klingons with different kind of styles going. So, yeah, so I have to agree with you. I kind of thought that we were going to get a little bit more variety than just a bedazzled mask. Not that there's anything wrong with those. I'd wear one.
I wasn't expecting. I mean, once Takuvma and his crew, they kind of set the tone for me. So I was kind of expecting everybody to look like that. What I wasn't expecting was how human Takuvma looked when he was a boy. Mm. That was shocking to me. Like, it was like, wow, you kind of look like everybody else.
Like, maybe the older they get, the more craggly they get.
I mean, it's like it's almost like when he was a boy and getting beat up and picked on, like, you almost had to really look for his, like, head ridges. And without them, he looked like he could have just been a human for the most part.
Almost, yeah. What I appreciated as well were the references to Kalis.
I did too, actually. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Who's Kalis? He's the Klingon Jesus, right?
Basically the Klingon Messiah. Yeah.
So I wish you know, every now and then someone will make a face, and I really wish there was some video accompanied here. And you asking Clyde about who Kalis is, he's like, where should I start? He looked up at the sky and then came back to us, trying to kind of like pinpoint exactly where on the Kalis lore he should start.
Guys, this is my moment.
Like, do I talk about the Kalis clone? I mean, do I talk about original Kalis?
I'm not even really into like the Worf storyline and the Klingons. But I do look up. I was looking up and thinking, man, I know more about Klingons than I thought I did. So it's kind of like,
yeah, I know you know some Klingon, right?
No, not a word.
Still no.
Okay. No lie.
No. Listen, if you want to keep your street
say hello.
If you want to keep your street cred, you have to draw the line somewhere.
Come on, Clyde. No. Give us a Vulcan hello. Klingon!
No.
I like that Grant drew the straw to get the first Vulcan hello on our podcast. I want second, though. Vulcans, you can do Grant first, then me.
Vulcans have the pointy ears.
I can't. I'm not going to be able to tell these two apart word-wise. Okay. I'm sorry. So you guys are just going to have to deal with it. I've ruined my own joke because I can't remember Vulcans and Klingons.
So for those of you just tuning in, Grant is a Star Trek noob.
Oh, yeah. I don't know anything about this world. So I didn't really have a problem with the Klingons looking different here or looking different than, I guess, Worf.
Yeah.
I mean, this just kind of fits with, like, makeup and costume have evolved. And I bet even with how they're doing production, they're not doing 22 episodes. They're not doing it on a smaller budget. And so they're able to put people in really high-end costumes and have it like form-fitted and drop that in quickly so that they don't have to do what they did with Worf. They can have Klingons look a little bit more like maybe how they originally envisioned them.
Yeah, you know what's sort of interesting about talking about looking like Worf is that Worf doesn't look like other Klingons.
Oh, he doesn't?
No, so he has a very kind of clean-cut crew look to him because he's a Federation officer. And so whenever we see other Klingon ships, they look like
Those dudes don't manscape like Worf does.
No, they do not manscape. Like, yeah. They have crazy hair and big boots, and they look like they could be coming from either a Kiss concert.
Okay, gotcha.
Or like a post-apocalyptic filming of like Mad Max kind of a thing. So yeah, and these Klingons do kind of look a little bit more like Worf's style a little bit. Like they're kind of together.
They're really put together.
They're kind of fancy. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And the practice that they continue with their dead, really honoring them that way. There's a lot of a good sense of honor and lore with these Klingons that I appreciated. But even though I did kind of see it coming, I think we all saw it coming. I did like the Shenzhou's idea to blow up the Klingon ship, or at least cut off the head, by beaming a...
It was a photon torpedo upon a worker bee,
right,
which is like a what I imagine is a drone of some sort.
Right. And of course, we in true Star Trek tradition, we have the captain and the first officer being the ones to beam over to the enemy ship, guns in hand, to take the prisoner and... It's just the two of us, and we're going to go up against an entire Klingon ship. I mean, let's go.
It was awesome. Saru was this close to becoming Captain Saru. So, I mean, if I was him, I'd have been like, oh, yeah, I'm working on the transporter. Just one more minute here. I get a promotion and
really,
a raise. Just one more second.
He seemed really uncomfortable with being left in command.
Yeah, I don't think he wants that job. No. But I think we all saw it coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, the writing was on the wall for her when she's, oh no, I'm gonna sacrifice myself by being a kamikaze and flying that warhead or whatever
right
into the ship. And they're like, yeah, we could just like use our little thing. Come on, guys, transporter thing. We could just use the fucking whatever.
Yeah, I feel like I knew she wasn't going to make it. I had this thing, especially when she turned to the Klingon she was fighting and was like, I'm 3 days away from retirement.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, girl, you're fucked.
I think the thing I didn't understand is the lack of use of the security personnel, right? Because this is a job for the security personnel. They're trained for this one thing. All right, here's what you're going to do. We're going to beam you over and you're going to go get this guy and bring him back. Right. Instead, you got the captain and the first officer. Again, that's a dumb move.
That's Star Trek, though.
It is Star Trek.
Yeah.
Just saying. Send a red shirt and a security guy, and you're good.
I mean, psychologically, maybe we should be really looking at Captain Philippa Giorgiano, or whatever her last name is.
Giorgio.
And why she seems so hell-bent on dying.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on there?
Okay,
like,
well, we kind of all figured she was the red shirt of this series in first couple episodes. We're actually kind of surprised she didn't die in the first one. Yeah. So when she did die, did it work for you guys on any level?
Yeah, actually it did. When Michael is beamed back, Kasaru's like, no, I mean, I'm not going to let you die too. You're coming now.
Right.
I was like, good choice. And then when she beams over and she just breaks down on the transporter pad, yeah. I was like, that's solid.
That was a great moment. That's the image that sticks with me from this episode. Her just having a breakdown on the transporter pad.
The emotional weight was earned there, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just a little disappointed because I was all ready to challenge you guys to make bets on when we thought, you know, Michelle Yeoh was going to end her run on the show, and it came kind of suddenly, and I was like, oh, well, so much for making a little money off these guys. So I was a little disappointed by that.
Well, I'm glad she didn't go out sitting on the bridge in her ship and just blow up.
Yeah.
I'm glad she went out
fighting. The Admiral?
Like the Admiral, yeah. But I'm glad she went out fighting, because if Michelle Yeoh's in something, I want to see some hand-to-hand combat with her.
Yeah, for sure.
I did get a little Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon in there. She was like kind of a move and a slap.
She,
yeah.
She did a spin.
I really wanted
and that was enough.
I wanted a flying dagger kick or something like that. But, you know, I'll take what I can get.
Some wire foo in there.
It was a believable spin, though. I don't know if you've seen people fight on Star Trek before, Grant, but they're not skilled in combat. What's combatants.
There are two classic Star Trek punches. One is when you get two fists and you make one fist. And then that's the fist that you punch with. And you punch somebody in the chest or the face with
and
that.
And apparently seems like a poor choice. Very powerful. Right?
Oh, people get knocked the fuck out with that one.
Yeah, you can use that on full-grown lizard men.
Yeah. Oh.
It works.
Gorn.
Yeah, Gorn.
Yeah.
Look,
hey, all
right. You're just so impressed every time. And then I couldn't remember the transporter thing.
You remember Gorn, but you don't know the difference between
Vulcan and a Klingon.
And a Klingon.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Here's a treat. The other classic Star Trek punch, I believe, is like a regular punch, but with an open hand.
We call that a sissy slap.
That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. The other classic Star Trek.
Yeah.
I don't need a demonstration. I see you.
I'm like 2 inches away from
you. You're
your
wavering
face.
There. You're like, come on, say another dumb thing.
Which I think is why, whenever there are security officers around, which is rare, it looks like you just interrupted their badminton game. Like, they're just some average dudes standing around, and now they're suddenly confused.
We're just collecting a paycheck. They never use us.
Yeah, never.
They're just playing on their phone.
Yeah. And they're quick to get killed and kind of mowed down.
Yeah.
They're not very skilled. And they don't look, for the most part, like you would expect a security officer to look. Like, if I'm the captain of a ship, my security officer is going to look like Shaq. Like, I want the biggest, baddest person. Or they're going to look like Jet Li. Like, I need the best. And these guys look like Harry and John from down the street, and I'm just like.
But to be fair, we had Michelle Yeoh.
True.
I feel like if
you send your A game.
Yeah.
She just happens to also be the captain.
She was the A game. So I had a lot of problems with the first episode, especially in the very beginning with the clunkiness of the dialogue. And then looking at the writers for the first episode versus the second episode, the first one was Brian Fuller, mm-hmm. along with Alex Kurtzman, who, you know, he's worked on Transformers movies, some other stuff. Like, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of Kurtzman.
Well, we did talk about this earlier. He co-wrote the Star Trek 2009 with Robert Orci, and that's probably the best of the three movies.
Okay, that's pretty good.
And he co-created Fringe, I think, which is a great sci-fi show. So he's done some good, some bad.
But what I thought was interesting is that in the second episode, Nicholas Meyer is the one who teamed up with Brian Fuller. And
this guy
has written a ton of Star Trek, including, apparently, he was the writer of Wrath of Khan, which everyone seems to love.
Yep, he wrote Wrath of Khan.
And The Voyage Home?
No.
That's the one with the whales?
No, he wrote
the screenplay for it.
He wrote the screenplay for The Voyage Home, and I think he wrote and directed The Undiscovered Country, Part 6.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. He pretty much wrote all the good original Star Trek movies.
So that's kind of cool having him on. And I didn't have any issues with the writing in this episode.
You know, what's interesting about what's interesting about Meyer being a big part of the crafting of this episode is we got reintroduced to the concept of the Vulcan Katra, which was, I believe, first introduced in Wrath of Khan. And this is at the end, spoilers for Star Trek II, when Spock dies. And he passes his essence, his Katra, on to Bones.
Unspoiler, he doesn't really die.
Also, his essence isn't what you're thinking it is, Grant.
Oh.
Okay, yeah, he looked a little worried there for a moment.
You're close to that open hand punch, my friend. So, Clyde, do you remember the concept of the Katra? Because apparently, of course, for story reasons in this episode, Sarek has to talk to Michael Burnham. He's light years away. Hey, how are you talking to me now?
And she's in the brick, so it's not like she can open up a comm channel.
The Star Trek hand wave is, you know, when you were young, I gave a piece of my Katra to you, so we have a stronger connection.
Creepy. That that's so, it feels
she
so
was
invasive,
young.
Right?
Stranger danger.
A little odd.
I've been inside you this whole time. What the fuck?
I could see not only some people being a little uncomfortable with that kind of scenario that might be happening, but I can also see Star Trek fans being like, that's not how the Katra works. So being as a Star Trek fan, how'd you feel?
You know what? It's a plot point. And so I thought they had to have it. And it was this moment of kind of reassuring. And so it didn't bother me. What I'm surprised at is that this is the first time they've used it. Like, it's kind of like, oh. Right. Like, it would have been worked a little bit better if it was like, oh, yeah, we've done this once, twice before.
Did anybody have a favorite scene? Like, for me, we talked about it. It was when, really, the action sequence on the Klingon ship, but the aftermath of that, where Michael Burnham mourns for her captain. I think the reason that landed so well and the emotional weight really worked for me was because we got some pretty decent flashback scenes where she is being not only mentored by Sarek, but also mentored by Captain Giorgio. I thought those worked really well.
My favorite scene by far was the prison escape portal jump thing.
Yes, Grant.
Like when she's working out the overrides with the system being like, look, I'm going to die. Don't you ethically have to kind of let
like
me out?
Negotiating with the computer.
Yeah, and then it's like, okay, if you make the hole small, if I jump, look at the time here, you also have to open that. And I was like, oh, that's so cool, like navigating that with a computer. Siri gets so much smarter, apparently, in the future.
I won't make a Star Trek fan out of you yet. You're geeking out about the tech. Good
yeah,
for
I
you.
Like that.
That was definitely my favorite scene. You've never really seen a character debate a computer before, like in the Star Trek universe,
not to this extent. No.
Yeah, I mean, and Data doesn't count, but it was just this great moment in the brig, and then the whole idea of the whole opening and her kind of shooting through, and you see her holding her breath. Like I was so kind of in a place in that moment where I was like, wow, this is amazing. I can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah, I think you guys touched on when she gets brought back and she's on the transporter pad is probably my favorite scene as well. But I also really liked the scene when it goes back over to the Klingon ship and the Klingon is dying. And the albino character,
Vok,
yeah, is holding him and they're kind of like exchanging words as he dies. And you realize that what Michael said about him being a messiah is going to happen. And you're like, fuck. And
very
so I
much.
Thought
she
that
called
was,
that one very right.
Called it really well. And then when you realize that, like, she was in this emotional state having just seen her captain die and played a role in him dying and potentially becoming this messiah. We'll see if it plays out that way. And that whole kind of situation I thought was really good, really yeah. tragic, really sad.
Vok and Michael Burnham are kind of very well thematically bonded now in this series. So it seems like it's set up that we're going to see the story through both of their eyes going forward, which this set up so well, not just story-wise, but emotionally.
Do you think that Vok is going to be the commander of the Klingon army?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Okay.
I think there's another character. So when T'Kuvma's talking, he's got two people with him, Vok and a female Klingon.
Female.
I think it's setting up that it's going to be her, but Vok is going to be the ancillary to Michael Burnham, like the number one. And I think that's my kind of theory and what I'm expecting.
It's because he's an outsider, because he's...
Yeah,
the Klingons are fucking racist.
Well, no, it's not just that. But again, he's kind of come out of nowhere, right? Like, nobody even knew who he was, you know, at the beginning of the episode. And they were like, you know, who's going to step up for this? And so I think they're going to look for the leader, the actual leader, to be someone who's more experienced. But he's going to be... I think that's going to be kind of the lead person that we see a lot of on the other side.
He does seem like an alpha follower, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. He doesn't seem like a leader. And he's shrouded in mystery. He is from the house of no name, right? Or
yeah, he's the son of none.
The son of none, right. And we still don't know who's playing him because they didn't drop that information beforehand. And we just watched the episode, so we don't have that information in front of us yet. So I'm sure we'll figure it out sooner or later. How do you feel about Vok in this episode, Grant? Where do you think his trajectory is going, and are you into it?
I mean, I didn't necessarily care too much. I thought the most interesting part of him was when he like shows his loyalty in the first episode by burning his hand.
Yeah.
Kind of stepping up.
Pretty cool.
But otherwise, he just seems like a zealot of the other guy, and I didn't necessarily get a lot of his own individual personality. Then again, I'm also looking at the bottom of the screen every time he's on so I can read everything.
Do you think that's going to be a problem, like all the Klingon scenes being in Klingon?
I mean, I don't think it gives credit and justice to the acting performances, at least from my perspective, because it's a toggling that I have to do, and I always have trouble appreciating how good someone might be in that role when I'm also having to read everything.
I mean, they speak English when they're talking to the Federation, so it's not like they don't know English.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting as they kind of what they do going forward. But I'm with Grant. I kind of wish I could appreciate their acting a little bit more.
Right. So let's talk about where this series is. We think it's going to go, because we saw this preview for the coming episodes, and we're at the end of episode 2, and we're still not on to Starship Discovery. We still haven't met a number of the main actors of the show.
I'm amazed with this. I mean, this has all the markings. You can see the skeletal structure was what Brian Fuller devised. Like, he had the vision for like the main plot beats. Like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to present a ship. We're going to destroy it. I mean, also very similar to like the Expanse at the beginning. Like, You're thinking you're with these guys, and then all that gets destroyed, and you're like, oh, now we're with wannabe Jon Snow.
Yeah.
And his crew.
Oh, low rent Jon Snow. There's a place in my heart for you as well, sir.
But I like that it's taking much more the serialized drama approach, and not only that, a high-end one that is high stakes and dropping cliffhangers at every episode and twists and turns. I mean, from what we can tell, she's going to a prison. The next episode's going to have her on a prison ship, like going off to like some planet. But then we get previews that, and we ultimately know that she's going to somehow be aboard the USS Discovery. And I love that the show is navigating and like driving plot heavy stuff without feeling like here's the episode of the week kind of thing going on.
Yeah, it feels like by the time we get to maybe what's going to be the status quo on this show, the crew of the Discovery on the Discovery Bridge with our captain, everyone established, by the time we get there, who knows if it's in episode 3, maybe it's in episode
season
5,
two, man.
Maybe it's at the end of the season. Hopefully it feels like it's going to be earned. Like, we're going to feel a sigh of relief that we're on this ship.
See, I don't think we're going to get there. I don't think we're going to get to this point where everything is calm and that becomes a norm. I think if we get to calm, it's going to be at the end of the episode or the end of the season. And then we start season 2, it's going to pick up. What I get from this show is the Star Trek that is calm and heavy dialogue and kind of character driven. I think that's done. I think this is the Fast and the Furious meets the Star Trek universe. Like, we're gonna keep going.
This ain't your daddy's Star Trek.
But it's interesting to me because
Star Trek killed my dad.
You know, what's fascinating is that I'm looking at this Michael Burnham character, and they kind of constructed her in one way through the first two episodes, and at the end of the second episode, they deconstructed that, and mm-hmm. so we got this person who had, you know, the only human to go to the Vulcan Science Academy and was very highly regarded and came on the ship and became the number one. And basically, they tore all that down, and now we're going to see the story of the dishonored hero. It's kind of fascinating. Like this is going to be – it's going in a different direction, and we're just at the kind of episode three.
And I like that her evolution or de-evolution is not necessarily dictated by the plot. I mean, it's something that has to happen to move the plot forward, but it really does feel like what's behind this is an interest in exploring, breaking down, and building up this character. So I think it is very, you know, fast and furious as far as a lot of the other elements, but I think we are still seeing a very character-based story, which I appreciate.
I was waiting for the character development for the people around her, and I think the reason why we didn't get it is because those aren't the people around her. And I think what we mm-hmm. saw was we saw some character development around Saru because we're going to see more of Saru.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else, including, like, Yeoman red hair, like, she's probably done. Like, I don't know if we're going to see her again.
We got a little bit of the medical officer guy, and I think we'll see him again. That's
yeah.
about it.
But that's it. Like, and he was so brief, it was hard to kind of see him.
Yeah, it was like a ship of red shirts.
Yeah.
So with this kind of like new direction, going back to that old idea of like, are you a Star Trek fan or a Star Wars fan? I kind of feel like for the people who never got into Star Trek, were always more of like Star Wars fans, I think that they might identify with this one a little bit more, like especially the Han Solo fans out there. I think they're going to be into it.
From my perspective, from your perspective, you're correct.
Yeah.
I'm on board this.
I feel the same way, but as a Star Trek fan, I think this has enough of what I love about Star Trek.
And yeah, I agree.
It does feel, for the most part, like it does fit in with the, I'm going to say the nasty word here, canon.
Well, and I think if you would try to release a Star Trek series that was heavy on dialogue and people walking around thinking through problems, I think it would have fell real flat right now because it's just not the world that we live in. Most of the TV that we see and that we watch is fast paced. Like, think about it. Like, some of the most popular stuff out right now is like Game of Thrones and Handmaid's Tale, and none of that is kind of slow moving
mm-hmm.
or optimistic.
Yeah, that's it. Everything's very dark.
But, you know, I still think we're getting the hopefulness out of this show, yeah. even though things are pretty bleak and dark. You know, it's the tension between a dark era in the Star Trek timeline and the budding of that hopefulness that is making this pretty interesting.
Do you think we'll get romance? Because typically in every Star Trek property up until now, there's some romance. There's characters, you know, you've got Kirk and lots of romance, but in TNG you've got romance, like you've got lots of stuff, you know. Will we see people getting the Vulcan hello?
I want to see Saru get it on. I don't know about you.
That is so weird, Mike.
I want to see how that works. I have very specific triggers here. So,
yeah, clearly. Yeah.
Want to learn more about Mike's triggers? Go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I think we're going to get a lot more of that once she gets on to Discovery. Mm-hmm. Just because of the characters that we haven't met yet that have been teased to us. Like, why have someone who specializes in space fungus if we're not going to have, like, a really beautiful botanical, right. some sort of greenhouse mm-hmm. where he does research and things like this? Yep. We know the gay character, so there are going to be some relationships that are that take center stage. And so I think we will get more of that, but I do think it'll err on the side of action from, say, SDNG.
I just think it's a really interesting choice to go two episodes into a series and still not set your, like, foundational set
yeah.
or characters. That's an interesting move to me.
It's almost like what we're watching here in these first two episodes is the opening crawl of Star Wars. But we're seeing it play out, you know? We're seeing it dramatized instead of just a crawl. This all feels like an interesting preamble.
It's like New Hope smashed.
Yeah.
It feels kind of like Battlestar Galactica. Where it does. It's, like, it's constantly shifting. You're like, I don't have a steady foundation. You're right.
Yeah, it does. All right. Anything else we want to say about episode two? Like I said at the beginning of this podcast, we just watched it. It's premiere night. It's after midnight. So I think we're all getting a little groggy, but I'm super happy that you guys decided to come over and watch these and talk about it so we can get these episodes out for people who want to listen. But any final thoughts on episode two? And also, I think I know the answer to this question, but are you pretty hyped to see more?
No.
No?
I'm done. Yeah, man, this is heroin. We love it.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I think this is going to be really cool. It's going to be something different in a world that I have a lot of goodwill towards. So I'm excited.
Well said.
After a summer of just not being that into TV, this is the first time that I'm thinking, man, I cannot wait to next week to see the next episode. Like, I'm excited again. It's got that kind of, it's appointment TV.
Do you say it sort of feels like the first time you were Vulcan helloed?
Yeah, a little awkward, a little special. I'll remember it always.
Excited, scared.
Yeah.
Very nice. And you can find us at StarTrekPod.com. Support us at Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. You can find bonus content there.
Do it.
We're also on iTunes/Apple Podcasts. So find us, search Star Trek Pod there, Star Trek Discovery Pod, and give us a 5-star rating and review. Guys, we got a good number of reviews already. And if we had a little more time, I would read some of them. But I'm going to save that for episode 3 because we have some really great reviews. Thanks, guys, for leaving reviews. Continue to leave reviews, and we'll eventually get around to reading yours more than likely. We'll just have a whole podcast of just reading reviews.
Oh, it will be fun.
That'll be great content. All right. Live long and prosper.